The Gemara was talking about fields, that you lost a grave inside the field, you don't know where the field is. And then it says, if there was plowing in the field because of the trees, so then you know there were no graves there. If there was no plowing, then it's possible to be graves, and it was tumah, and so on. So now the Gemara just said, the Buddha holds, Achi is Shamzok in a Talmud, in order to purify a field, that there was a lost grave in the field, you need to have a scholar or an older person. Not everybody is experts in this field to know if it was plowed or not plowed. Yes, a grave, no a grave. Bottom line was, there's a suffix if there are graves in the field. And if there's a suffix if there's graves in the field, you can't walk there, because if you become tummy in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you had a problem going into the Beis HaMikdash when you were tummy. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Shema Minof from Rabbi Yehuda, you see, that Tzurva Mirabonin, that a scholar, the Ika B'masa, who lives in a city, Komila D'masa Alay Ramya, everything of the city has to know about. Here you're talking about a cemetery. He said, what does Rabbi Yehuda say? In order to know if a cemetery is Tamei or not, you need to have the Tamil Chacham. What does the Tamil Chacham do with cemeteries? The answer is, it's a communal affair. Anything that has to do with the community, the Tamil Chacham has to know about. The Sabai proves from this din of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. So now the Gemara says, a new din. Amar Rav Yehuda said, again, and remember we learned that in the olden times, cemeteries were all over the place. They had set cemeteries, and then they had places that people just buried graves, you know, was the buried people. So Amar Rav Yehuda says, Matza Evan Mitzianis, if a person found a single stone that was marked with lime, with sid, which was lime, that's the way they would mark a grave. Because like we said, before the whole Gemara is discussing, you need to know where there's tumah, because you have to stay away from it. So how did they used to mark graves? They didn't have, like we have today, tombstones with the names on it, everything. If there was a grave, they would put a stone, they would put lime on top of the stone, and then people would know that there's a grave here. That was the marker for a grave. So he says, Malta Evan Mitzianus, if you found a stone marked with lime, tachtel, underneath the stone, is tummy. Because the mark would be right on the grave. Shtayim, what happens if you found two stones near each other? So the Gemara says like this, im yesh sid b'nehem, if there's lime, im yesh sid b'nehem, if there's lime on the ground between the two stones, b'nehem tummy. In between the graves is also tummy. Because basically what they did was, each grave didn't need a marker. You needed a marker for the general area. So what did they do? They would have one stone here, put lime in the middle, and that means the whole area had graves. So he says, if there was one stone only marked with lime, then underneath the stone was tummy, everywhere else was tahar. If there were two stones with lime in between, so then the whole area was tummy. What happens, Vim Ein Sid Benahem? What happens if there's no line between the stones, just on the stones themselves? So Benahem taught, between the stones is taught.
But on the stones is
tummy. Yeah, if the stone itself is marked with line, then underneath the stone is tummy. But the area in between, if there was no line, then it's not tummy. So now the Gemara says, V'alfa gav deleka chedesh, even though there was no plowing between the stones, are you telling me if there's no lime, it's tahor? How could that be? For Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Motza Evan Achas Mitzayenis, if you found one stone marked with lime, Tachteho Tomei, underneath it is Tomei. Shtayim, if there's two stones marked, so it says like this, Im Yesh Chedish Beinehem, if there's plowing between them, then tahor. You know the place is tahor. Why? Nobody ever plowed graves. Except they learned before the Egyptians did it. But Jews don't plow on top of a grave. It's disrespectful. So if there's two stones and there's no plowing done in between them, so then you know it's tummy. Because why wasn't plowing done? Because there were graves there. But vim lav b'nehem, and if there's not, if there's no plowing, b'nehem tummy, in between is tummy. So what do you see from the braisa? The whole differentiation of the braisa is dependent if there's plowing or not plowing. And here we're saying, if there's no line between the two stones, there's no grave there. But the Braises has a different definition. If it was plowed, then there's no grave. If it wasn't plowed, then there is a grave. So it's nothing to do with lime or not. Amar Rapapa, so Rapapa says, I'll tell you what the story is. Hachi here is speaking, Shehasid Shafach Adoshayim, when the lime was poured on top of the stone, and Umaruda, and it spread, Lekanu Lekan. Meaning like this, there were two stones, and you know how you got lime in between the stones? Somebody poured lime on top of the stones, and it dripped down in between them. Okay, so then what's the din? It says like this. So then, there's lime in between the stones. But it wasn't lime that you poured in between the stones. You poured it on top of the stone, and it dripped down. So he says, Im ika chayrish b'neihem, if there's plowing between the stones, which implied that the lime just, by mistake, spilled there, then tahar. Because if there was plowing, you know there was no grave. Aye, so why is there a marker of lime? Because it spilled down from the stones. Why? Because he said, the Eimer Machmas Chedeshu, because what happened? Because of the plow caused the cement on top of the stone, the lime, to fall down. Because it shakes the whole area. V'loi, but if there's not...
How long is the lime there?
Doesn't matter. Could be either ages.
And the lime spreads?
Coloring.
Huh?
Paint.
No, when they poured the lime,
the
movement of the plow on the ground caused the thing to shake.
But how much after they put the lime
doesn't
in
matter.
The plow?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Even if it's hardened, the plow's going to shake it. Lime is not like cement.
Yeah, but lime doesn't set in?
Not like cement, no. V'lay, and if there is no plowing, then we have to assume Sid the Baina, that the lime which is in between the stones is Tomei. Meaning like this. The question is, why is the lime there? Is it there on purpose? Mean to mark a grave? Or did it come there accidentally from the two rocks? So the Gemara is putting the Braisa and the Mishnah together basically, which means like this. If you have a rock that's limed underneath his Tomei, two rocks that have lime on top of it, both stones are tameh, in between is tahor. What happens if there's lime in between the two rocks also? So the Gemara says it depends. If there was a plowing in between the two stones, then we assume the lime is there accidentally. So then there's no grave there. Why isn't there a grave? Number one, they don't plow on graves. Lime is used as a marker for a grave. But over here, it's not a marker because the plowing caused the lime to fall down from the stone into the area in between. But if there's no plowing, then we assume, number one, there's a grave there. And that's why the lime is there, because it was put intentionally as a marker for a grave. That's the way the Gemara, in the times of the Gemara, used to mark graves with lime.
Outside the cemetery.
Yeah, in the cemetery, we're going to soon see. If there's markers all around, then obviously everything inside is tummy. You don't need markers.
I don't understand. The lime was set there to color it, no?
No, the lime was there as a marker to show there was a grave underneath the stone.
Oh.
Again, they weren't tombstones like we have today. They were rocks.
I thought lime was...
Is it the lime to color it so you know there is a grave underneath?
Is it to cut or if it was to color it? It was a mark. I mean, a mark. Whatever, whether it was because of the color, because of the lime itself. A lot of the tombstones were made much later.
The lime is pretty soft, so it melts. It's soft.
It melts, and it's but it's not like cement. Not only with rain, when you plow mamish next to it, the whole area shakes. So of course the lime is going to come down. So the Gemara is saying two things basically. Plowing shows, number one, that there's no grave there. Even if there's lime, it's still not a sign that there was a grave there because it could have fallen off from the two rocks, two stones next to it. Now the Gemara says another thing. Amar Ravasi, Ravasi says, Meitzer Echad Metzuyon, if you have in a field, yeah? And we're discussing, we don't know, is there a graves in the field? There's no graves in the field, whatever. So he said like this, Meitzer Echad Metzuyon, if one boundary of the field is marked with Tumah, then Hu Tamei, that area is Tamei, V'chol Asada Kula Tehera, but the rest of the field is Tahar. Why? Because the fact that only this area was marked, the rest of the field is not marked. If the rest of the field is not marked, so then it's Tahar. Shnayim, what happens if there's two boundaries of the fields are marked for Tumah? Hang Tmeim, those two areas are Tamei, V'chol Asada Kula Tehera, and the rest of the field is Tahar. It goes even more. Shleisha, if there are three boundaries marked with Tumah, Hain Tmeim, those areas are Tamei, V'chol Asada Kula Tehera, but everything else is pure. What happens? Arba, what happens if four corners of the field are marked with Tumah? Hain Tehaden, the mark is Tahar, and the whole field is Tamei. Why? Because the Gemara says, remember the Gemara said before, they didn't put the marker right on the Tumah. They put it off a little bit. So if it's one stone, we assume that the Tumah is under the stone. But when you're talking about marking a field, so they didn't put the marker directly on the Tumah, because they didn't want people to go that close. So where they made the marker, there was no Tumah. So the marker area is not a Tumah, but the whole field, because it's marked on all four sides, is Tumah. The Amar Mar, because it says, a marchik and see in mimokim Tumah, you don't distance the marker from the Tumah, meaning, if there's a grave, you don't make the marker 10 feet away, because then you're losing Israel. You're making more of Eretz Yisrael Tumah. We don't put it directly on top of the mace, because then people are going to come all the way too late. They're going to become Tamei. So you put it a little bit away. But you don't put it too close. You don't put it too far. Okay. Now the Gemara starts a much easier part of the Mishnah. Okay. So it says, the Yates and Afala Kalayim. In the Mishnah there was a din. What you're allowed to do Chol HaMoed. The first Mishnah of the Masechta, it says, Bezdin would send out shluchim, okay, and Chol HaMoed to do what? As follows. They would fix the roads, they would fix the mikveh, they would do all the public needs, and they would even go out for kalayim. What is kalayim? Kalayim, we learned, you're not allowed to plant wheat and grapes together. Huh? Why can't you wear wool and linen together? There it says you can't. It's kalayim. Now, by the way, there's not only kalayim, there's worse. There's two types of seeds. I mean, a lot of things you're not allowed to plant. So Bezdin would send out shluchim to make sure people didn't plant kalayim. And the Gemara is going to, we're going to learn soon, what Bezdin did if they found kalayim. There was a first decree, a second decree. But it says, Chol HaMoed, they would send out shluchim to check and make sure the fields didn't have any mixture of seeds, especially not grapes and wheat. So the Gemara says, "V'raminol." I'll ask you a question. I mean, "V'akalayim b'cholos shomayid nafkinen." The Mishnah basically says, when did Bezdin send out shluchim to check if there was mixed seeds? And Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, "V'raminol." I'll ask you a question from a Mishnah. It says in the Mishnah, Be'echad ba'adar, on the first day of Adar, mashmir malashkolim. Bezin, let everybody know that you have to bring the half a shekel, and ala kalayim. And the kalayim, Bezin sent out shluchim, Rosh Chodesh Adar. Chol HaMoed Pesach is 6 weeks after Rosh Chodesh Adar. So the Gemara's question is, our Mishnah is saying that Bezin sent out shluchim, Chol HaMoed Pesach, to make sure there was no kalayim, and in the end the Mishnah said they did it at Rosh Chodesh Adar, 6 weeks earlier. So when did they do it? And then the Brahma Mishnah continues. B'chamisha asibay, on the 15th day of Adar, Kerin asa Megillah b'krochem. You read the Megillah in the walled cities. V'yeitz in the kavitz asa d'drochem. They go out and clear the roads from the thorns, or l'sakin arachavis, and to fix the streets. Why? Because until Adar is winter, and that just shows the rainy season. As we know, rain makes potholes. That's if you have tar. But in the olden times, the streets would be muddy. The roads would be muddy. So Bezdin, Rosh Chodesh Adar, when spring came, basically. No, you can sit here, you left. Yes. And Rosh Chodesh Adar, they sent out people, Bezdin, sent out people to fix the streets. So the Gemara said, what did the Mishnah just said, what did they do on Adar? Rosh Chodesh Adar, they told people you have to bring the half a shekel. 15th day, they read the Megillah in the walled cities. Then they also sent out Shluchim to fix the roads that were ruined during the winter. And, what they did over Lamed HaMikvois, and to measure the mikvahs to make sure that they were also kosher. Why? What was the problem? It's very simple. The mikvahs weren't like today, beautiful indoor mikvahs. They would have mikvahs, outdoor grease pits, as they call them. Now, the mikvah would get full of debris from the winter. And before Pesach, everybody had to go to the mikvah to be able to be pure, to bring the carbon Pesach and the carbonus and everything. So Beis Din would have to go measure the mikvahs, clean the mikvahs, get it all ready for Pesach. When did they do this? A month before Pesach. No, whoever. No, Beis Din sent out people. But when did they do it? On the 15th of Adar. Not Chol HaMoed Pesach. And they did all the public needs. And they would also mark the graves. Why? Because, like Rashi explains, a lot of graves during the winter time with the storms and the wind and the rain, the markers got ruined. So they would have to go remarking all the graves. And they would go out on Kalayim. Meaning, if they found Kalayim, they would uproot it. Huh? No, this Braitha said they did it on the 15th of Adar. And Rosh Chodesh Adar, Beis Din said, hey guys, get ready to give the half a shekel and make sure you're not planting any kalayim. On the 15th of Adar, they went out. If they found kalayim, they uprooted it. Their messengers of Beis Din, if they saw kalayim in your field, they went into the field and just ripped it up and threw it out. So the Gemara's question is very simple. Here our Mishnah says they did a Chol HaMoed Pesach, and this Mishnah says they did it on the 15th of Adar. So when did they do it? Can't do it both times. Why is it they taka did? So the Gemara answers like this: Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Yisrael Rav Chanina. There's two answers. One is from Rabbi Lozer and one is from Rabbi Yisrael Rav Chanina. Chadam, one of them says the answer is Kam beBochir, Kam beOfel. The two types of crops. There's early crop and later crop. So it's possible for people to plant kalayim twice. The earlier crop was in Adar. The later crop was a month later in Nisan. So it says Beis Din went out twice. Once for the earlier things and once for the later things. So it's not a contradiction of the Mishnahs. They taka went out both times. Once in Adar, once in Nisan. And the other one answered, V'chadom, and the other one answered, Kam bizroim, kam biyirokas. One Mishnah deals with grains, and one deals with vegetables. Grains are planted earlier than vegetables. Vegetables are planted later. So the Gemara is answering, they went out twice, once for the grain fields, and once for the vegetable fields. And as the Mefarshim explained, what's the difference between the two answers? The difference is, did they concentrate on late and early of the same crop, or did they concentrate on different types of crops? But Beis Din, by the way, what they did was, they actually went into the fields and uprooted everything they did. But the Gemara is going to explain, so this they did initially. And then people said, hey, this is good, you're weeding the fields for us. Mm. So Beis Din went and made the whole field hefker. If Beis Din found you planted kolayim, Beis Din proclaimed their field free for all, whoever wants it can take it. And then people stopped doing it. They partially lost their property.
The field is hefker, or the produce in the field? The produce is sort of not kosher, not proper.
Kola sada kula, the produce.
And if the produce is improper kilayim, can we take it and eat it? Or?
It depends. Certain kolayim is asibano, and certain kolayim is not. Some we'll see later in the Gemara. Some of it is also the benefit from also, or like kolaya kerem. Kolaya kerem is not only forbidden to eat; it's forbidden to benefit from also. So you couldn't even sell it.
So if they make it hefker, people should benefit from.
No, but the whole field, meaning even the parts that's not kolayim, the whole area, they just made hefker.
They probably got rid of the client.
No, because then people said, thank you for weeding up my field. We'll see you in the Gemara soon. Okay.
Are you saying that they planted kolayim in order for them to weed up their field?
No. Oh, okay. But if they did plant kolayim and the Beis Din came and did it, they weren't upset with it. Rabasi said the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Loish. What?
Is there like something special about it?
No, it was space savers.
Okay.
That was if a person had a small plot of land, okay, and they wanted to plant grapes and vine, there had to be a mechitza between them, there had to be X amount of distance between them. Otherwise, people would plant it. I mean, just for saving space. Yeah. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Abasi, Amar Rabbi Yechanan. When did they go out? No earlier than... But basically what they're going to say now is like this. The dates of 15th of Adar and Chol HaMoed Pesach are not engraved in stone, so to speak. That's when they normally went out. But if Beis Din had a feeling that something was going on before, they would send out messengers before also. That's what he says. When did they go out? When the sprouts were not recognizable for before the date. So Beis Din had nothing to look for. But if the sprouts were recognizable earlier, that means Beis Din was afraid they might be planting kolayim earlier. They went out even earlier. Meaning, those were the normal times of inspection. But it didn't have to be dafka then. It could have been earlier, it could have been later. Now the Gemara says Jewish talk. The Gemara asks a very simple question. We know Chol HaMoed, you're not allowed to work. You're not supposed to work Chol HaMoed. Why in the world did Beis Din send out these guys in Chol HaMoed to do all these things? It's a long time. Jews are not supposed to be working.
It's not considered work. It's a mitzvah.
Well, 1 second. Hmm. 1 second. The Gemara asks, Mashna b'Chol HaMoed and Afkinen. Why did they dafka go out Chol HaMoed? They should have gone before or after. And obviously, as the Mefarshim explained, or Rashi says, the Gemara's question is, because the Mishnah says you're not supposed to do work on Chol HaMoed, why did Beis Din dafka send out Shluchim on Chol HaMoed? So the Gemara says, interesting. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Mishim Schar Pa'ula, the Mezen Gabon. Because the inspector's price was cheaper on Chol HaMoed. Why? It was cheaper. One second. This is a Jewish Gemara. The Gemara says, because people didn't work the normal jobs, people didn't have the normal jobs on Chol HaMoed, so people were basically out of work. Supply and demand, so you'd be able to hire workers cheaper Chol HaMoed than you would the rest of the year. One minute. The Gemara says, Amar Av Zvid V'Semer Av Misharshi Shma Mino. You see from here an interesting thing, that ki avinu lehuschar, who paid the inspectors, not private industry, the Beis HaMikdash. Mitrumas halishcha yavinali. The money came from the funds of the treasury in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, like the Gemara says later, who paid these inspectors? This is the job of Beis Din. So the Gemara says, people used to donate money to the Beis HaMikdash for Karbanos or whatever, so they had money in the treasury. The treasury of the Beis HaMikdash paid for these things. So therefore the Gemara says, the Isalka Daitach, if you say that the people who were caught with Kalayim were fined to pay the workers, he says, who cares if it's more expensive or less expensive? If the private industry is paying for it, because of that you can make people work Kalayim. If the people that are doing the sin of planting Kalayim have to pay for it, so who cares when you're making it cheaper for them? Why?
How is it that they're paying for it if the Beis HaMikdash is paying?
No, that's the Gemara's proof. The Gemara says, from here we see the fact that we're looking for a bargain shows that the Beis HaMikdash is paying for it. Because if private industry, who's private industry? Who else should pay for it? Beis Din send out messengers to see if Jews are planting Kalayim. Who should pay for it? The Gemara says, the logic is that if you caught a guy doing it, he should have to pay for the worker. So then the Gemara says, who cares if it's cheaper? Let him pay more. The fact that we don't say that, and we're looking for bargains, this shows that the Beis HaMikdash pays for it.
So Beis HaMikdash is allowed to send people to work on Kalayim?
Oh, so they ask a question, but that itself, so they answer because it's a mitzvah. Like you said, whatever. Because it's a mitzvah. And because it's a mitzvah, it's different.
It's a mitzvah to check on people to see.
Tzorech rabim, and also it's a mitzvah.
Oh yeah, to make sure for the mikvah and all that.
Right.
Okay, for the mikvah checking.
The best, and also the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, Tesis over here asks a question. Here. So Taisus asks, the Gemara says later, a worker that has no money to live could work Chol HaMoed. So maybe Taisus says, how do you know it's cheaper? Maybe it's pushed because they have to pay these guys that have no money to live. So Taisus says, V'shemei yeshleimar dahani de mitzvahs hitiru. It's only because it's a mitzvah that Chachamim permitted it. To measure the mikvahs, to fix the roads for the Jews, to go to all the public needs of a mitzvah. That's why they permitted it on Chol HaMoed. Now, just because it was cheaper, No, Taisa says like this. There's two opinions. If a guy who has no money to live is allowed to work Chol HaMoed. La halacha in Shchunach you're allowed to. But in the Gemara there's two opinions. If you're allowed to work on Chol HaMoed if you have no money. So Taisa says like this. According to the opinion that says you're allowed to work if you have no money, the question is not a problem. Because they have no money, so they're working. Big deal. The question is, according to the opinion that says that if you have no money, you're not allowed to work Chol HaMoed, so what's the Gemara's question? So why, that's the Gemara's question, why are they doing it? But the answer is also because it's a mitzvah, so it's not only cheaper.
What did they use the money that they assist as penalties from?
Went to the Beis Din. No, they didn't. These penalties,
they didn't use it for this purpose.
No. Here, by Kalayim, they didn't make penalties. The Gemara's question was, let them pay for it. The Gemara thought maybe they pay for it. But the fact that Beis Din pays for it, so they don't pay at all. The fine was that they destroyed the field. But they didn't. Bechlau, when a person paid a fine, if it wasn't to a private person, the fine went to Beis Din.
And they could use it for any purpose? Once they have the money?
Yeah, it was for basically for more or less in the same type of communal functions. Use the money for communal things. They didn't.
Could you bring a Orban using that money?
If Beis Din wanted to, they could. Beis Din could do whatever they want with the money.
But it was money generated to a sin.
There were two types of donations. There was Bedik HaBayis, which meant general donations to the Beis HaMikdash. They accepted cars, RVs, boats, accepted everything. If a person had something they didn't need, obviously something nice, I mean, I wouldn't give junk to the Beis HaMikdash. But if they had expensive things, they would donate it to the Beis HaMikdash. What did Beis HaMikdash do with it? They had a gift, a treasurer. He was in charge of the money.
What do you call
it? Cherem? The Chumash is called Cherem, yeah. But what they used to do is Beis HaMikdash would sell it. And the money, they would need it. Their expenses, or their Beis HaMikdash had expenses. You know, they had to pay the Beis HaMikdash, they had to do various communal, like these things came from all the various different money that they did.
To give a receipt for a tax write off.
For sure.
Could they use it to purchase animals?
They could. Beis HaMikdash was able to do that.
The money that was designated for Beis
HaMikdash? Once, but the money came. No. Beis HaMikdash means not only for korbanos.
Maintenance.
But it could also be used for korbanos. But if somebody donated an animal as a korban, they couldn't sell the korban and use the money to pay these guys. Because it's kedushas haguf. If the kedusha is on the body, then you can't do anything with it. You have to bring that korban. Unless, if it had a mum, so now it wasn't kosher for the mizbeach, so then they would sell it and the money they would use for korbanos. But people in the treasury, there was a, the Gemara says there are a bunch of boxes. It's very interesting the way the Mishnah Shkolim discusses the various different kupas and lishchas that they had in the Beis HaMikdash. And there was called lishchas chashoy. There was a private kupa that people just go and put money and things in there. Nobody saw them and nobody, it was like a private thing. Nobody should know who's getting it, who's taking it. And in fact, when the Kohenim went, the Mishnah says, when the Kohenim went into the lishcha to empty out the boxes of money, no coats with pockets. Because they had to be not suspected of anything. If there were pockets, the guy would say maybe they're stealing money, putting it into the pockets. They weren't allowed to walk in plain, long coats, no pockets. Everybody was able to see what they were doing. They weren't able to steal money. And the whole halachic procedure, so to speak, how they did it. Okay, now the Gemara says, Va'ad kama. Va'ad kama is when you uproot the kalayim that you find, how much like percentage of kalayim is considered kalayim? If you found a mixture of different seeds, how much? So the Gemara says, Amar of Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Eisa Shishininu. Like we learned in the Mishnah, in kalayim, the Mishnah says, Kol sa, any sa, Sheyesh ba reiva zerem minacher, a quarter kav of a different species, that was considered, you might have to reduce. Now, a quarter of a kav is a 24th of a saw. Because there's six kabin in a saw. And this is a quarter of a kav. Okay? So basically a 24th. If there was more than a 24th, so more than a 24th, which is like less than 4%. If there's less than 4%, then if there was 4% or more, they uprooted it. They minimized the amount of kalayim.
No matter how big it was?
No, it was percentage. 4%. 1/24th, whatever that percentage was.
So they could have had a huge field, and if 4% of they used as kalayim was okay?
Less than 4%.
Less than 4% was okay?
It's not 4%, it's 1/24th, it's less than 4%. Right.
That's permissible to use?
It's not permissible, they didn't uproot it.
Why would they uproot it? What would they do with back to land? What's the reason for that? Is it legal to have it? Why would they do that?
He says, he brings down over here from them, he says like this. The owner is obligated only to weed out enough of foreign species to reduce its measure to less than a quarter of kav per saw. He may leave the remainder because when the foreign species is not significant, the mixture is not rendered as kalayim.
Oh. So that means if a person in his backyard just had one branch of kalayim, that's okay. It's not like that with shatnas.
No. Shatnas is one woolen thread in a massive linen garment, or one linen thread in a whole thing shatnas.
Is it right?
Yeah.
This is also midoraita.
Well, it depends. Chutz la'aretz, not chutz la'aretz. You know, klai hazroim. There's also a difference. You can't plant things together, but if they're planted, you can eat them. Like certain fruits are mixtures of Yeah, you have what, I mean, a lot of the fruits, no?
Tangelos
or
Chinese pears.
Nectarines. Some of them are mamish mixtures of various fruit, you know, together. So the issue is only to plant it, but you can eat it. Kliakernim you can't eat and can benefit from.
What?
Kliakernim, wheat and grapes together.
Wheat and grapes you cannot benefit from.
Right.
Nowadays?
Yeah.
So his example of one branch in your backyard, is it Kliim de Rabbonim, or it's not?
If what?
Just one branch in your backyard, which is a mixture of grain and grape.
No, that's Asa Min HaTorah. Wheat
is not 4% or allowed. Or
no, but you're saying one branch, it's more than the 24.
Does contemporary halacha talk about genetically altered seeds?
I'm sure you could find it in halacha, yeah. Like what?
Most of the seeds now, they are genetically altered.
No.
For different reasons, so they don't. The plant won't be sick and the insect won't attack it, and
you
know, different things.
No. And is that so? Why? What difference does it make in halacha?
Are you allowed to do it? I guess.
Could do it. Okay. Now the Gemara asks. For Tanya, the Gemara asks a question. Now we just said that what did they do if they found kalayim? They uprooted it. Yeah. For Tanya, the Gemara, as we learned in a braisa. Heskinu sheimafkid and kol asada kula, that the inspectors made the whole field hefker, ownerless. So the question: what do you mean they uprooted the kalayim? When in a different braisa it says the whole field became hefker, free for all. So the Gemara answers: Leikash, kam kedim takana, kam lacha takana. There was an earlier decree and a later decree. The Gemara explains: what does it mean? The Tanya says in the Brais, "Berishena ayu ekrin umashlichem lefnei behemtem." What did they do? Initially, Bezdin would uproot the kalayim. What would they do with the kalayim they uprooted? They fed it to the animals of the owner of the field. So what happened? The Gemara says, "Vayu balabatim smechem shtei smachis." They were doubly happy. Number one, Shemanashchem loves to descend. They would weed out the fields. And secondly, Shemashlichem of Nebahemtam. They fed the animals. Tony said, this is a picnic. They're doing all my work for free, plus they're feeding my animals. So what happened? Eskino, they made a takana. Shoyoekino, Mashlichem aladrachem. The Bezin should uproot the stuff and throw it into this, not to the animals, into the street. But they were still happy. Because Shemanashkin said the same, they would weed out the fields for them. Okay? Meaning, they had less simcha than before, because before it was two simchas. But, so what did they do? Iskino, they made a takana, Shemafkir and Kolasada Kula, the whole field became hefker, ownerless. And because it became ownerless, that any, the whole thing was uprooted. Not uprooted, they just made hefker. So the Gemara answers the question. One Braisa says they uprooted it. Another Braisa says they made it hefker. The Gemara says, not a problem. You're right, both were right. Earlier, initially, they just uprooted it. And they say that didn't work, so then they made it the worst takana, that they made it hefker. They made it free for all.
How would people know that it was free for all? Did they have signs?
Yeah, Bezdin publicized it. Yeah. What's the problem? Why?
For me.
It's time to wake up.
A person goes after 120 years. Until then, they don't go.
But in Thailand, it's like it's time to wake up 120 years.
The Mishnah says like this. Now the Gemara, this is a new Mishnah, so the Gemara is going back to the continuation of the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah is talking about which field you're allowed to water in Chol HaMoed. Basically, the bottom line is, anything that's going to cause a loss of money by not watering it, you're allowed to water it. If it won't cause a loss of money, then you're not allowed to water it. Even if it's going to cause a loss of money, the Mishnah says, if it's a lot of work, Tirchi Yaseira, you're also not allowed to do. So now the Mishnah starts a similar continuation. Blazer ben Yaakov Eimer, Blazer ben Yaakov says, Meishchen Asamayim Me'ilon Le'ilon, you're allowed to draw water and divert water from one tree to another tree. Ancholameid. In other words, and the Gemara is going to discuss what type of field we're talking about here. But basically, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, what happens if one tree has a pool of water underneath it, next to it, and you don't need so much water for this tree, but another tree doesn't have any water, so you could divert, make a canal, so to speak, from tree to tree. But, ubovach liyashis kol asada kula. But you can't water a whole field. Meaning, and the Gemara is going to explain, as Rashi explains now from the Gemara, the Mishnah is speaking about a field that really gets water from rainwater. So the grains, you don't have to water, because it's going to get enough water. Trees, though, need more water. So the rainwater won't be enough for the trees. So therefore, the Mishnah says you can water tree from tree, but you can't water the whole field, because the field is sufficient with rainwater. And therefore, it's not going to be a loss of money. If it's not going to be a loss of money, then you're not allowed to water it. But the trees, you need to water.
You can only water one tree from another?
No, you can water a bunch of trees, but not the whole field.
From a separate source.
Yeah. Then he says, Zroim shalei shasu lefnei hameyed, plants that were not watered regularly before Yom Tif, leyashkin b'meyed, cannot be watered cholameid. Why? Because if they're not regularly watered and you don't water them, it's not going to ruin it. Things that need regular watering and you don't water it, so then obviously it's a loss of money. So then you can water it cholameid. But if you don't always water it, so then why water it cholameid? But chachamim matirim zevaze. Chachamim say in both cases you could do it. Meaning you could water the entire field, not only the trees. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you can only water tree to tree, but not the whole field. Chacham said, "Ach, you can water the whole field." Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said you can't water the field that weren't planted, weren't watered before Yom Tov. You're not allowed to water Chol HaMoed. Chacham said you could, and the Gemara is going to explain the source of this argument. Yeah. Rameir, the Grashi says, Rameir's opinion that says even base a baal, even the water that's from rainwater, you could also do it. In the first Mishnah. No, there's different types of fields. Base a shalchan is a field that needs to be irrigated. Base a baal is a field that gets watered from rain. So the Chachamim, the Mishnah, say you can't water a rain field. Because that's extra work for no reason. There's no loss of money. But Rameir holds even such a field you could water. Mm-hmm. Rameir holds you could water even that. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda said the following din. If the field was normally, naturally moist, either from underground sources or from whatever, but now it dried up. It dried up. So the din is, you're allowed to imhaisa. Funny way did it. Imhaisa sadim tunanis. If the field was naturally moist and dried up, you're allowed to water it. Meaning, the Belazar ben Yaakov first said that you can only water the trees, not the whole field. So Rav Yehuda says, according to the Belazar ben Yaakov, if the field was moist and then dried up, you could water it also, the whole field. Because according to the Chachamim, you could anyway water the whole field. So this whole din doesn't apply. Rav Yehuda is speaking according to the Belazar ben Yaakov's opinion. The Belazar ben Yaakov says you can only water tree from tree, but not the whole field. He says though, but if it was wet and it dried up, then you're going to ruin it, so then you're allowed to water it. Tanya nami hachi. So we taka learned in the Braise, Kshaamru asa lashkesim b'meyed, when they said, meaning, when Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said, you're not allowed to water a field on cholameid, lo yamru ala bizroim shleishasu lefnei hameid, that's only things which are not watered before Yom Tov, meaning things that are not normally watered on a regular basis. So then you're not allowed to water it. But plants that are watered before Yom Tov, you're allowed to water them on Chol HaMoed. Why? Because if they're regularly watered and you don't, it's going to ruin them. But what happens if the field was naturally moist and then it dried up? Mutter, you're allowed to do it. And as Rashi explains, this is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion. Because according to the Chachamim, you could water the entire field. This whole din doesn't apply. Yet, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that if it was watered before Yom Tov, you could water it Chol HaMoed. Not only that, even if you didn't water it before Yom Tov, but before Yom Tov was moist, so there was no need to water it. But now it dried up, you're allowed to water it. But he says, "Vein mashkin sadeh gadid b'meit." You cannot water a naturally dried field on Yom Tov, meaning a field, where Rashi explains, a field that's dried because it normally waits for rain. That means you never water the field. You taki cannot water it on Chol HaMoed. Chachamim matirim ze beze. Chachamim hold you could do it in each case. Okay, like the same, basically the same argument as the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, you cannot water a field unless it's going to be ruined by not watering it. Chachamim hold you could. So it's the same machlekes over here in the Braisa.
But this is a dry field.
No, but it depends. What do you mean dry field? The dry field is because it's normally wet and then it dried up.
But it's a sadeh garid. Sadeh garid is, isn't it sort of dry all the time?
Completely dry. So the chacham hold you still could do it.
Right.
No, we're going to see later in the Gemara. I mean, why did the chacham hold you could do it? Because the shiloh over here is like this. Can you work Chol HaMoed in the field to save it from loss? That's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion. And then there's Rabbi Meir's opinion over here, is called the Chachamim. Hold, not only to save a loss can you water it, you can water it to enhance it too. And that's the machlekes in the first Mishnah, and that's the machlekes in this Mishnah. Why did a Chacham hold you could water a field?
What?
Chacham hold you can water. He says that Elazar ben Yaakov is stricter. He says you can only water trees, right? Or a field that was watered before Yom Tov, you can water Chol HaMoed. Or a field that was wet, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, it became dried. So in all those cases, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you can water the tree or the dried up field, because if you don't,
before it's need, basically.
But why? Because if you don't, it's going to get ruined. So you're going to have a loss. And you're not mukhiv to have a loss. Right? What happens, though, to enhance it? That means, if I don't water it, it's not going to ruin, but it won't be as good.
Which is then the antithesis of
right. Right. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said you can't water it. The Chachamim, who happens to be Rameh from the first Mishnah, says you're allowed to water Chol HaMoed just to enhance it. Even if you're just enhancing, it's not going to get ruined.
Enhancing. What I understand from enhancing.
Well, yeah.
What I understand from the word enhancing, meaning to add an extra measure of goodness to it.
No, to make it better than it was.
To make it better than it was.
So the Chacham said, Chol HaMoed, you can't do that. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov.
Right.
It depends how you call Chacham, first mission, second mission.
Who came first and who came later?
The rabbis in each times.
Who do we follow?
But Lamashul, today, why can you water your garden? Can have your sprinklers water your garden?
Not too much water.
Huh?
It's not too much water.
Not only that, because if you don't water your thing for a week,
it dries up.
It's going to dry up. The grass will dry up.
But that's not called enhancing.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's why you're allowed to do it, no?
It's not called enhancing.
Just to say,
the footnote number 18 at the end.
Yeah.
Why?
No, I know. I know. We're not there. Taisus asks Akasha, the cheder. Why is halacha like the chacham? Because the Gemara says wherever Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is mentioned in the Mishnah, the halacha is like him. But over here, there's a shaila with a chacham. Chacham is reiv. So that's what the footnote 18, because Ravina Paskins that we didn't get to yet. You jumped the gun. We didn't get to Ravina's statement yet, but Ravina seems to pass like the Chachamim. So Tais is going to ask, how is Ravina passing like the Chachamim when the Gemara says Allah always like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? But you jumped the gun. You didn't get to Ravina yet. He's mentioned in the Mishnah.
Which is in our case.
Right, in our case he's mentioned.
Could I ask a question?
What?
Why do the Chachamim seem to consider that even for enhancement, which seems to be antithetical to what Chol HaMoed is all about
no,
enhancing a loss. Enhancing is not preventing a loss. Enhancing is actually making a profit, so to speak, in a way. It's like making
week.
A profit.
And you could do it next week.
Well, that's exactly. So it's Chol HaMoed. It's only a week. And they're allowed. Where do the Chachamim see the... where's the logic in
that? The Chachamim hold because if you... What it could be a machlokes in a more halachic nature is stopping a prophet considered a loss or not. In Hebrew it's called menias harevach. In other words, if I damage your property, I have to pay. Right? What happens if I didn't damage your property, but I caused you not to make a profit? Is that called a damage or not? This is two opinions in halacha. In this case, it could be, I'm not saying this is for sure, but it could be that this is the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, profit is not considered a loss of money. So, Chol HaMoed, you can't do it. The Meir and the Chachamim hold, what do you mean? You could make the field better, and you're not, that's a loss of money.
So, good way to work a Chol HaMoed then?
No, but we're talking here working in a field or not.
I'm thinking you could apply it to any case.
Yeah, but...
Let's go to work then.
Yeah, but we'll see later in the Gemara. The Gemara goes into more dinam and cholamayt if this then applies. Let's just finish this Gemara. Amar Ravina. Shma mina. And this is where Tesis asks his question. Hai tabitza, a garden patch. Sharele tabutze b'chula d'mayada. You could sprinkle it with water and cholamayt. Which basically is going to the chachamim. Because sprinkling water, if you don't sprinkle water, you're not going to lose the field. It's going to make it better. He says, why? Because he says, stay guarded by time. Why can you water a dry field? Because irrigation accelerates the growth and makes the later crop into an earlier crop. Right? Meaning it makes it better. Not a loss of money. You're going to have the crop later. What is the dry field? What do you gain by according to the Chacham, you can water a dry land, right? Why? Because you want to make the crop that would come later come earlier. So the same thing he says, sprinkling the field would be the same way. By sprinkling it, you're making it better than it was before. So Tesis asks, Ravin is talking according to the Chachamim, when Lucheret Aloch is a Kribbalos Ben Yaakov. Anyway, we'll see it. Okay. Yeah.